Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You don't know Jack. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Though Jack the Ripper is maybe the most notorious terrorizer of Victorian England, he's certainly not alone. No. Just a couple decades before Jack the Ripper, there was Spring-Heeled Jack, a leaping, terrifying, superhuman English terrorist who plagued the English nation for more than 60 years. Traversing folklore, psychological events, and historical figures, today on Ghost Town, the many legends and life of Spring-Heeled Jack. Spring-Heeled Jack, though he didn't have the notorious nickname yet, was first seen in London in late September of 1837. A businessman who was returning home late at night was confronted by the figure of a man, taking huge, agile leaps over the high railings of the local Barnes Cemetery. The mysterious figure landed directly in front of the man, stunning him but not attacking him, and then vanished into the night. The man was able to give a description of what he saw, quote, "a muscular man of devilish features," that included large, pointed ears and nose and protruding, glowing eyes. Soon after, an English woman named Polly Adams and her two friends encountered a similarly moving individual, only this time it wasn't an encounter but a full-fledged attack. Polly was separated from her friends when the lanky, muscular man tore at Adams' clothing and scratched her stomach with what she would later describe as, quote, "iron-clad fingers." In October of 1837, a servant named Mary Stevens was walking to her place of employment when a strange figure leaped from a dark alley, managing to trap her within his arms and, as with Polly Adams, scratched her up with claw-like hands that were, quote, "cold and clammy as those of a corpse." Petrified, Stevens let out a loud scream, and many rushed to her aid. Meanwhile, her corpse-handed attacker scuttled off into the night. As described in historian Mike Dash's extensive study of the figure's reported appearances, more and more began to report these bizarre attacks, really more like harassments or assaults from a ghost, imp, or devil in the shape of a man or a bear or a large white bull, and not just in the streets, but at people's homes. The through line, at least at this point, was that this leaping, dark, claw-handed, well-dressed, often, figure would ambush people in dark areas or ring someone's doorbell and then proceed to claw at them. Similar reports continued to trickle in through the rest of 1837, with theories that the attacker was maybe a ghost, a bear, like I said, or even the devil. More and more disparate reports would eventually lead to the theory that this mysterious monster might actually be a man, a human, and a well-to-do one at that, who would dress up, sometimes in a suit, sometimes in red shoes, sometimes in armor, or a cloak, or all of the above, leap around and scare people as a kind of a strange bet, or a perverse fascination. Soon there was official recognition of the attacks by Lord Mayor of London, Sir John Cowan. I didn't know the UK had mayors at this point. Maybe you did. He discussed all of these bizarre Spring-Heeled Jack incidents at a public house session on January 9th, 1838. I will say for the most part he was pretty skeptical of all the reports, believing that they were incredibly exaggerated. But he did recount one letter of complaint that he felt he needed to validate and share. It said, quote, "It appears that some individuals of, as the writer believes, the highest ranks of life, have laid a wager with a mischievous and foolhardy companion that he durst not take upon himself the task of visiting many of the villages near London in three different disguises, a ghost, a bear, and a devil, and moreover, that he will not enter a gentleman's gardens for the purpose of alarming the inmates of the house. The wager was, however, been accepted, and the unmanly villain has succeeded in depriving 7 ladies of their senses, two of whom are not likely to recover, but to become burdens to their families. And on the servant coming to open the door, his worse-than-brute stood in no less dreadful figure than a specter clad most perfectly. The consequence was that poor girl immediately swooned and has never, from that moment, been in her senses. The affair has now been going on for some time, and strange to say, the papers are still silent on the subject. The writer has reason to believe that they have the whole history at their finger ends, but, though interested motives, are induced to remain silent. A lot of wordiness, but in conclusion, the mayor tried to reassure people of London that this degenerate leaping man-devil would be caught, and that he was doing damage, but likely the attacks were perpetrated by a gang of wealthy men who had nothing better to do, not something supernatural. That being said, the attacks did not stop. The police did not dismiss these stories, and even the Duke of Wellington, although nearly 70 years old, went out one night armed on horseback to hunt and kill the monster. He, of course, was not successful, or this episode would be considerably shorter. On February 9th, 1838, less than a month from the mayor's voiced concern in that wordy letter, the sun rose on fresh snowfall, illuminating hundreds of miles of hoofprints, not from four legs, but from two, like some kind of satyr, or hooved beast, walking concernedly upright. Beginning in Totnes and ending in Littleham, the prints were seen by hundreds of people as they zigzagged through gardens and over rooftops and walls. Inexplicably, some of these prints were not on snow at all, but seemingly burned into the ground. As more and more counts poured in, the Victorian press began to catch on. It was not long until the attacker was editorialized and given some creative names, including the more popular, the Park Ghost, and of course, Spring-Heeled Jack. But the most famous and scariest Spring-Heeled Jack stories were yet to come. We'll get to them after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
How's it going out there?
We're checking in.
This is the check-in.
Okay, sounds good.
Sounds good, everyone good?
Yeah,
everyone good. Is everyone good? Okay, and I'm going to leave you guys here. There's some pizza in the fridge.
Yeah.
There's $20 on the countertop. And
I don't have...
sex?
Well, yeah, definitely don't do that, but don't have any friends over. Don't have any friends.
No, because we'll know.
Yeah, we'll know. We'll know if you have friends or have sex.
Mm-hmm. We'll know.
There's no cameras.
Mm-mm.
There's no cameras.
Just the camera in my mind.
Yeah. Great. We want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to say, when we were doing this episode, talking about Spring-Heeled Jack, and I was like, oh, like the Morrissey song. So that's where my aged, horrible personality comes in. That's my contribution to this.
Oh, it's perfect.
Is a Morrissey song.
Yeah, you're bringing it to contemporary spaces.
Yeah.
And
to
admirable.
Me, it's contemporary, but it's not. It's probably a 30-year-old song at this point.
I did not know Morrissey had a song called Spring-Heeled Jack. That's where I am. Uncool.
Why would you, though?
I don't know.
Chapel Roan.
Chapel Roan, baby.
Yeah.
It's my brat summer.
Well, there are some of our government that there's a little folklore around them, too.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh. A little mystery.
Wow.
A little mystery around
them. Learning so much about our government.
Yeah, they got a little twists.
Mm-hmm.
The mayors. We got Taco Bell holding cat. Always got Taco Bell in hand, ready to party.
Legendary. Just it's always hot, too.
It's always hot. It's just like perfect amount for everybody.
Oh.
You know those Taco Bell commercials, they always, if somebody brought Taco Bell, people were like, I don't care about this Coke anymore. Mm-hmm. I just care about this Taco Bell.
Yeah. Always there, always bringing fresh Taco Bell. What a fabled creature of folklore.
Well, you know her as Cat Joselle.
Hello.
This one's a little more sensible.
Hmm.
Tissue carrying Casey.
Oh, very important.
You always need a tissue.
I do right now. Even.
Always need a tissue. You never think to bring, because I'm too cool for Mm-mm. tissues. But you know Mm-mm. when somebody's got tissues, you're like, thank you for this.
It's like a commercial where like someone's got a stuffy nose and a hand like goes into the frame
yeah.
and it has like a pristine tissue that you would just take and you're like, thank
These
God.
Are good quality tissues. This is no
yeah.
junk.
No, this is not bullshit. This is Kleenex.
It's got lanolin in there yeah. or something like that.
Exactly.
Your soft
Aloe.
Nose.
Yeah.
That would be tissue holding Casey Weber.
Hello.
This one's a little more rockin'.
Ooh, a little more rock and roll than tissues?
Yeah. It's guitar pick holding Marissa.
Okay, she doesn't play. She just holds it.
She just always has a pick in case she's at a concert or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the guitar player's like, I don't have any more picks. I can't play anymore. Boom!
It's like that commercial where the hand comes in the frame, but it's not a tissue, it's a pick.
And it's a perfectly weighted guitar pick, a medium, large, soft.
Ooh, I didn't realize they were different sizes.
There are. I'm a rocker
oh, okay.
by trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Saving the show, Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
And this mayor is change for a dollar having Matthew. always got change for a dollar.
Wow.
Some people need change for a dollar. Some meters still need coins, mm-hmm. and I hate that.
Yeah.
And chances are I might have a dollar, but I need that change.
Yeah, you need those coins.
And someone who's going to save the day and save some of us a parking ticket. It's Matthew Clemens Leray.
Thank you. Wow, these folkloric superpowers are all just having stuff.
Yeah. This is very helpful.
Cool.
This one's very helpful.
Mm.
Extra phone cord having Kelly.
This actually is very helpful.
It's really helpful. This saves very... the day.
Listen, you forget.
Dead phones? No, thank you.
Yeah, you got to plug in.
And it's just like whatever one you might need. If you, I don't know, have some weird Samsung. Yeah. Sorry, I'm really elitist.
You're in Europe?
Yeah.
You're like, I need the adapter in Europe. And everyone's like, it's different in France and it isn't Great Britain.
That's Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
And then there's our governor, better known as all-knowing, everything-having avian. Yeah. Has the answers, has the things. Will you get it? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, but they have it. If you can dream it, they have it, and they know it.
Mm-hmm. You don't even know what you have or need until they tell you.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you need this.
You think you don't have something? You think you need something else? You know shit.
Yeah, like she I can't does. Find my debit card right now.
And she's like, but you're going to need this key to this room. And you're like, oh, my debit card plus many more in this key to this room. My mind is blown. My yes. mind is blown.
Well, that would be our governor, Avian Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episodes, just the good stuff, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You want to get back to England?
We're back. We're in England, where Spring-Heeled Jack, a terrifying figure known for having hooves, leaping, and seeming to look like a well-dressed man or bear or ghost most of the time, is terrorizing the people of London and beyond. And the instances came fast and furious, the most famous being the evening of February 20th in 1838, when 18-year-old Jane Alsop answered her father's front door to a man claiming to be a London policeman. As she opened the door, he yelled out to her, quote, "For God's sake, bring me a light, for we have caught Spring-Heeled Jack in the lane." According to the story, she ran back into the house, grabbing a candle, and she ran back towards him. And as she ran back towards him, she noticed he was wearing a long, dark cloak. As she handed him the candle, he threw the cloak to the ground and began spewing oddly colored flames from his mouth. Jane Alsop later described the man to London magistrates, saying, quote, "He was wearing a kind of helmet and a tight-fitting white costume like an oilskin, and he vomited blue and white flames." Then, I think you know where this is going, the man grabbed hold of the terrified girl and clawed at her with his sharp fingers. Jane's sister heard her screams and ran to her side, dragging her back into the house and slamming the door. Perhaps one of the weirdest parts of the story, of many weird parts, is that as soon as Jane Alsop's sister slammed the front door, the attacker actually knocked again and then waited for a response. When he got none, according to the sister's testimony, he simply disappeared. A mere 8 days later, on February 28, 1838, the second most famous Spring-Heeled Jack incident occurred. 18-year-old Lucy Scales and her sister had just finished visiting her brother, a butcher, in the suburb of Limehouse. Walking home around 8:30 p.m., Lucy and her sister passed an alley, where they noticed a man standing at the entrance. As the two girls walked closer, they noticed the man was wearing a long, dark cloak. All of a sudden, he grabs Lucy and vomits, quote, "a quantity of blue flame into her shocked face, blinding her and frightening her so badly that she suffered from seizure-like fits." Surgeon Charles Pritchell would later say that, quote, "she was suffering from hysterics and great agitation, in all the probability the result of fright." The Alsop and Scales cases took place far closer to the City of London, hence them having far more attention paid to them. In fact, eyewitness reports of Spring-Heeled Jack continued popping up all over the country, with copycat attackers captured here and there, trying to take advantage of the legend. On April 14, 1938, the Times newspaper went on to print a story from the Brighton Gazette, telling the story of a gardener in Rose Hill, Sussex, who encountered a creature, quote, "in the shape of a bear or some other four-footed animal." The creature growled loudly, getting the gardener's attention fairly quickly, climbed onto the garden wall, ran along the top of it on all 4 feet. It leapt down off the wall and then proceeded to chase the terrified gardener for some time until it once more scaled the garden wall and then just ran off. Though this story feels a bit more, again, animal-like, it gets lumped in with the Spring-Heeled Jack lore because, of course, the signature state of the figure, the leaping, the threatening, powerful jump, which again kind of transcends Spring-Heeled Jack's form, be it human, animal, ghost. At this point, you could find any number of penny dreadfuls depicting a Spring-Heeled Jack figure clutching a woman in one hand and twiddling a vaudevillian mustache in the other. And the devil was in the details of this character, a kind of supernaturally leaping cad, one who tormented the women of England with violence, threats, and vexation. Other details compounded about the perpetrator, including having eyes, quote, like flaming red wheels, and the ability to vomit those flames, again, usually blue and white. Of course, all of it seeming more and more like mythology. But the more Spring-Heeled Jack's fame grew, the less frequently reports about him were made, until 1843, when a new wave of sightings swept the country. That's when attacks on carriage drivers became much more common. Spring-Heeled Jack made a series of appearances at a military base in Aldershot, where he harassed and terrified sentry guards in 1877. In 1904, Spring-Heeled Jack made what is considered its last confirmed sighting in Liverpool, where he was witnessed leaping up and down the street before jumping onto the rooftops and bounding away. Of course, many plays, novels, and again, penny dreadfuls feature the Spring-Heeled Jack character, and that were written about and discussed throughout the second half of the 19th century, cementing his status as a figure of urban legend and exaggerating the already insane attributes of the character. Think the ability, again, to leap over buildings. As time went on, reports of Spring-Heeled Jack sightings grew even more bizarre, perhaps fueled by popular fictitious accounts. Even more superhuman traits were attributed to him, including the ability to leap through the air and over whole cities. So, who or what was Spring-Heeled Jack? There are many different theories as to what exactly Spring-Heeled Jack was. The most grounded, if not the most popular, is that Spring-Heeled Jack was a man named Henry de la Poer Beresford, the Marquis of Waterford, an Irish nobleman. During the late 1830s, Henry was often in the news for acting crazy, breaking into places, vandalizing public property, and starting drunken brawls. He himself had his own fun nickname, the Mad Marquis, based also on his famed contempt for young women and his outbursts towards them. It was known that he was in the London area by the time the first incidents of Spring-Heeled Jack were reported, and in 1880 he was named as the perpetrator by E. Cobham Brewer, who said that the Marquess, quote, used to amuse himself by springing on travelers unawares, to frighten them, and from time to time others have followed his silly example. But by 1842, the Marquess married and settled into the quiet suburb of County Waterford, and reportedly led an exemplary life until he died in a riding accident in 1859, which wouldn't account for the later Spring-Heeled Jack incidents. Then there's the theory of mass hysteria, rooted in the fear and paranoia around the idea of an ominous, horrifying perpetrator who could leap out from an odd, shadowy street corner and attack, or wind up on your front door to spit fire or claw at you, might have fueled the greater public reaction and more sightings. Additionally, his skill in evading capture and not seeming to age with the passing of time built up the Spring-Heeled Jack character, the threat that didn't go away in the minds of the public for a long, long period of time. And then there's the paranormal explanations as to what Jack was, from a demon, an alien, or even a manifestation created to cause spiritual turmoil. People think he might be a demon come to earth, accidentally or purposefully summoned into this world by practitioners of the occult, or people who manifested him to create chaos. Or Spring-Heeled Jack was theorized to be an alien, what with his pseudo-human appearance and features, with the agility of something maybe studying to exist in a high-gravity world, playing the part of, quote, human in his long coat and human clothing. Some paranormal experts put him in the phantom attacker category, which I can get behind. Phantom attackers appear to be human and may be perceived of as prosaic criminals, but may display extraordinary abilities, as in Spring-Heeled Jack's jumps, which is widely noted would break the ankles of any human who would replicate them, and or constantly evading the authorities. Victims commonly experience the, quote, attack in their bedrooms, homes, or seemingly secure places where they feel safe. They may report being pinned or paralyzed, or on the other hand describe a siege in which they fought off a persistent intruder or intruders. Many reports can readily be explained psychologically, most notably the old hag phenomenon, which is like an archaic name for sleep paralysis. That's a good example of this phantom attacker kind of mode of understanding, which again kind of traverses both this scary paranormal and, of course, intrinsically psychological human state, often verified by many, but again, whose physical presence can't really be pinned down, and there's no tangible evidence kept. To keep this episode mega creepy, I should tell you that a handful of spring-heeled sightings have been made in recent times. A salesman in Hertfordshire reported seeing him, quote, leaping high hedgerows in great bounds in 1986. Then a family on their way to Ewell reported a man leaping away at impossible heights in, drumroll, 2012. A mere 12 years before, again, we sit in this room recording this episode, Spring-Heeled Jack was seen. Clearly, Spring-Heeled Jack is a mysterious and terrifying folkloric figure that feels, in my humble opinion, a little too contemporary for comfort.